The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
One of our most listened to podcasts every single week is called the UAB Director's Chair. It's because that Blazer Nation gets after it. And of course, you get the man, Mark Ingram, who's the UAB Athletic Director himself, and we love having him on. We can get coaches on. We'll get Trent Dilfer on over the next couple of weeks, but I love getting the AD on because he overlooks the entire athletic department at UAB, and of course, he's been at Tennessee. He's been a man around the block a few times, so he knows what he's doing. He joins us right now. Mark, how are you doing, brother? Everything good?
Yes, sir. I'm great. How are you this morning, Tony?
Good. I wanted to mention, regardless of when you're hearing this particular podcast, I was up in Memphis to see the Grizzlies and the Cavs play. It's been a while since I was in Memphis, and I know that UAB going into the AAC, Memphis will be some of that fertile ground that you not only can recruit, but also to visit. But I wanted to know, since you're a classic rock guy, your thoughts and feelings about the city of Memphis, the city of Elvis, the city of Jerry Lee Lewis, and just your overall view from a sentimental standpoint of what Memphis means to you musically.
Man, I love Memphis. Tony, and I've visited there a lot. A lot of my teammates were from there. And then just through my career have been there many times. I'm a big fan of the city of Memphis. And yeah, when you talk about music now, there's a lot of great artists, and you name two of them in Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis, of course, B.B. King and, Johnny Cash. I mean, there's a lot of people that got their start in Memphis, and it's such a rich, culturally diverse city that had so much sort of a soulful sound right there. There's something about the river. I don't know what it is. There's something about the Mississippi River, man, that seemed to inspire people. And you just had a real eclectic blend of musical styles coming out of Memphis. But you think about Beale Street, and it's a great city. And that whole scene that you were in around the FedEx Forum and Beale Street and that whole area, you know, you got Rendezvous Ribs down there and Peabody Hotel. It's a really, really neat place.
We went to the Tin Roof and my son walked in the place and I was like, this is where your dad used to hang out at. These are the kind of places that your daddy's like, really? And I'm like, oh yeah. I said, this brings me back quite a bit now. My drinking days are over. I said, but this is where I used to hang out. And so I said, we're going to get something to eat. He goes, I'm not eating here. And I said, oh, you're going to eat it. We got some sloppy nachos, man. His face was face down in those things within about 5 minutes. It was fantastic. Mark Ingram joins us here, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. It's called the UAB Director's Chair. And we get it every single week. Wherever you get your podcast, we're on every major industry. So wherever you listen to your podcast, you can listen to the show. We'll talk some more NIL stuff because I know Mark Ingram loves talking about that. I did want to mention the NCAA Division I Council voted this week to eliminate the voluntary coach designation, increase the number of coaches allowed in baseball, softball, ice hockey, men's and women's basketball. We don't get a chance to talk about some of these other sports at UAB. We'll do that. And also, they voted to eliminate the standardized test score requirements for immediate eligibility for incoming freshman athletes and to update the guidelines for transfer waivers. There's a lot there on that plate, but when you heard about some of these changes, what were your thoughts as an athletic director?
Well, you know, the transformation committee has spent a lot of time on a number of topics. I don't agree with all of them, but you know, you would assume that that'd be the case. You can't please everybody. Doesn't matter what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. I think my only sort of concerning issues really was when I would look through there and see something about more committees and more subcommittees. And it's just one of the things that we as ADs within the industry, and I think externally, people complain about it when they think about the NCAA and its governance, is it's just this huge nebulous kind of, bureaucratic body. And I thought there was going to be fewer committees, not more committees, but you know, that's, I'm whining there, but at the same time I did. And so I think I would have rather seen something that was a little bit more streamlined in terms of process, because when you just think about the sport of football, and I think every sport has this, though I shouldn't say that not knowing, but you know, football has a football competition committee, which I'm on,
mm-hmm.
A football rules committee, a football oversight committee. Then there is at the AFCA, the American Football Coaches Association, of course, the coaches are a, you know, sort of a committee of themselves. They vote on all these things that affect football, to weigh in, you know, to share their opinion on the, you know, various topics. And then all that stuff has to go through the D1 council. But if you just think about how many committees do we need, you know, how many committees. And when you say, well, let's see if we can amend a rule, we really need to take a look at that rule. The amount of time it takes to change a rule is incredibly long. And you know, committee members are rolling in and out, and you got somebody you think is really passionate about a rule. Well, then they roll off the committee, and now, you know, where does that sit? Or is anybody carrying that forward? Where it's a lot. And so that's really inside how the sausage is made, I guess. But you know, most of the things that the transformation committee presented, I think 90% of us are doing 90% of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think a lot of it is dramatically different than what most of us are already doing. I think it's probably clarifying for people to say, hey, this is not just a thing you can do, but now it's a thing that we're recommending or that you must do. As it relates to the additional coaches, the value in that is it's really just telling somebody, giving them a title, saying, hey, we can now call you the assistant pitching coach.
Yeah.
And they go, well, why does that matter? Well, it matters for their ability to go get another job, and it helps get more people involved in the sport and kind of another entry point for people to get into the coaching profession. And I think that's valuable. And it also kind of eliminates the gray space as to what they can and cannot do.
Yeah.
You know, if I was a volunteer coach and I'm out there on the field, there were limitations to what I was permitted to do coaching wise, but at school A, that person might be doing a little bit more than the one is at school B. Well, now they're just saying, hey, look, if you want to provide instruction and it's good for the kids and it's not hurting anybody, why are we monitoring that?
Yeah.
You know, there's not a rule that says, well, here's what you have to pay them yet. And, you know, that'll probably come not too distant future, but not sure where the budgets will come for that. If the NCAA will provide those additional resources for all of us, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But so we'll have to figure that out. But it's really just about trying to provide more instruction and there not being any gray area as to what you're permitted to do.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We'll take your email questions. Huge UAB proponent and Paul Ensign, who of course follows us as well and listens to the show. He's got an email question for you about scheduling. We'll get into that in a second. I did want to get one more thing before we move on here. The NCAA convention last week, of course, said goodbye to Mark Emmert, who I've spoken with on the phone numerous times. Super nice guy. He said goodbye. Incoming president Charlie Baker came in. But the Baylor president, Linda Livingstone, who is the chairwoman of the NCAA's Board of Governors, had something very interesting. She said, and this is in quotes here, as a collective enterprise, we are both thriving and threatened. As an athletic director, you could probably clarify this better than anybody. What exactly is the NCAA? It seems like such a lame duck institution with so much power, but it doesn't know how to wield that power without catching so much flack back. What is the NCAA when it comes to what college sports looks like right now? And what do you think it looks like in, say, the next 5 to 10 years?
You know, well, I think what Dr. Livingstone is saying is that on the thriving piece is that it's very popular. College athletics is very popular. People want to watch it. People enjoy it. And that's good. Young students want to participate in it. Fans want to watch it. That's all really positive. That's the thriving piece. The threatened piece is coming back to litigation. It's about, we seem to we're starting to lose control of ourselves. You know, when you look at what we're permitting around the NIL space, you know, the NIL, as we've talked about many times, was intended to be allowing our student athletes to use their name, image, and likeness and be paid for that. So if a business wanted to put a player's picture on a billboard and pay that player for it, they could. If they wanted to have a, you know, in your old radio days when you'd have a live TV remote out of a business, you could basically have that and have a player as like a celebrity and pay them for their time.
Mm-hmm.
A wage that was, you know, market value, you know, so to speak, for what that sort of thing is worth. It did not take into account, though all of us in the industry knew that the rules would be twisted.
Yeah.
It's the folks in our governmental offices that in Congress that either refused to believe that or thought they knew better to say, I don't know, that wasn't going to happen. Well, it immediately happened in the form of what we are all calling collectives. Well, collectives don't do business.
Yeah.
You're not a business.
Mm-mm.
But, and so Tony, if you're a recruit and I'm a coach, or no, better yet, you're a recruit and I'm a donor. I'm a fan of whatever my school is. Mm-hmm. It is impermissible for me to just give you cash.
Yeah.
Hey, please go to my school. However, I can give that money to a collective and the collective can give you that cash. Well, that's just absurd. And then what are you supposed to do? You've got to put out a tweet saying something about, I love so-and-so collective. Well, what business is the collective doing?
Yeah.
They're not doing any business. And so we have said, well, you can't pay for play is impermissible and recruiting inducements are impermissible, but we're doing it.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing it. And we're acting like it's somehow different or okay. That's what I assume that Dr. Livingstone is referring to. The threatened part is we're trying to get a hold of that and protect our model, which is true amateurism. And then you've got people trying to make these students employees, which I think is an awful mistake. And,
yep.
And for reasons we could spend a lot of time talking about, but you know, you want to be an employee. Okay. Well, drop a pass on Saturday and get fired on Sunday. Remember, you're an employee. I'm just saying, you think that won't happen?
Yeah.
It may not happen, you know, immediately, but it'll happen in a pretty near future. And I think the other part that people worry about there is that I love the Olympics. I love the purity of sport as it relates to the Olympics. I love watching those athletes who are, you know, truly the very best in the world compete against each other and on a stage like that. And, you know, college athletics, we are providing those athletes to the Olympics. The vast majority of those athletes came through college sports. We are training them before they get to the Olympic Training Center in most cases. If they all become employees, I don't know where Title IX stands.
Yeah.
Well, so because Title IX is an educational amendment of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So if there's not an educational component, you're an employee. Well, I'm not sure where that is. Well, that's not good. That's not good for sport, and it's not good for the balance of what we do. It's not good from an equity standpoint. There's a lot of concerns there. And so that's where we're losing control.
The UAB director's chair with Mark Ingram. He's the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. And of course you can follow him on Twitter. That's at @UAB_AD. And we have an email as well as a tweet here from Paul Ensign. We'll get into that here in a second. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You'd brought up these collectives. These things just sprouted up overnight. And the story about Jaden Rashada, who is requesting a relief from his letter of intent, he basically had a 4-year, $13 million. These numbers are so stupid. A 4-year, $13 million deal with Gator Collective. And then they followed through. He's a 4-star kid out of Pittsburgh, and they followed through and said, we can't come through for you. So he's asking to get out of his letter of intent. Now he is threatening to sue the Gator Collective. You knew it was coming, right, Mark? I mean, you knew this is where we're going to be going.
Sure.
Explain to the people out there, and I finally figured it out. Explain to people what these collective entities are, and also how were they created, and are there multiple ones for each individual university?
I don't know if there's multiple ones for each individual university. I've not heard of that, though. There could
be. Sounds like a great business model.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. Look, I want to be competitive, and right now, you know, we're trying to be, and we're doing all that we can for our student athletes, and we have a collective called Southside Solutions, and you know, but a lot of people I think see stories like that, or they'll see a story. And I don't know anything about the situation at Florida beyond what we've all read, right? So I don't know what's really true and what's not true. And but I've, you know, you see these stories and you see a player who's reportedly getting a big cash payment, and then the player loses their starting job, and then they transfer. Well, how good does the person who wrote the check feel about having given a player all this money when the coach said, I got to have it, or I'm not going to get this player. I got to have it, or I'm not going to keep this player. He's going to transfer, she's going to transfer, whatever. I got to have this money. And then they get hurt, which happens in sports, or for whatever reason, they lose their starting position. Well, we had to have that money, and then they transfer. How good do you feel? And so then how do you feel about doing that a second time? So these are major concerns. I was on the phone this morning with a close friend of mine at a Power Five school who said that at their bowl game this past year, they had some number of players a few days before the bowl say that they weren't going to play if they couldn't get paid more.
Yeah.
And I need the money before the game.
It's crazy.
And so now they're all scrambling around. What do we do? And they find themselves trying to call boosters and get money into the collective that can be, I don't know, wired or whatever, to compensate the kid. And I'm just thinking, what is going on here?
Yeah.
What are we thinking? And
well, you're offering 18-year-olds millions of dollars.
Whatever it is, yeah. I don't even know how much money, but I mean, if they said $20, it's really not, it's not that. It's the point is, it's not about how much money. The how much makes it maybe more absurd, but the fact that a player can turn around now and say, I'm not playing if you don't do this. What happened to all of us feeling so fortunate for the opportunity to play at this level?
Yes, sir.
I used to love the bowl games. The bowl trips were fun. We'd go play a team that we'd never played before and weren't going to schedule again. We were on television, which was thrilling to us. We thought that was a big deal. It was a big deal. It still is a big deal. But all of those things, along with the value of the education, has been completely erased or ignored. Like somehow, you know, we're abusing these kids. And NIL, if you look at the – and I don't know the financials, but if you look at, the quarterback at Alabama, Bryce Young, he did a national deal with Dr. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
The guy won the Heisman Trophy.
Yep.
That's what it's supposed to be.
Yep.
You've got somebody whose face is familiar. People know who they are. They can be on it doesn't have to be a national ad, but some sort of ad campaign. And then they get compensated for it. That's what it was supposed to be. Not let's find a way to pay these kids and do it, with a wink, wink through recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
And act like the deal happened after the fact. And the kids are showing up on their recruiting visits and they're, well, I was offered this much at the other school. Can you beat that or match that or whatever? If you can, then I'll come here. Well, that's not any way to really build a team.
Yeah.
That's not the right way. You're not going to have a positive culture in your locker room when you've got guys or ladies coming to your school for that reason. It's still school. You need to choose your university based on, how far is it from home and is that right for you, close or far?
Well, when you got a 4-star guy who's not even, a 5-star guy and he's being promised a 4-year $13 million deal, I'm not going to pretend I wouldn't take it and wouldn't entertain that idea. But I mean, like you said though, it's about the education. Less than 1% of these kids are actually going to go play at another level. And maybe they're grabbing the cash while they can, but when they haven't even taken a snap for the Gators yet and they're demanding that type of money, the letter of intent seems like it's intentional, I guess, but it doesn't really count for anything. Commitments just don't mean anything anymore.
Right.
And with these collective entities mudding up the waters, it's unfortunate because, as a college football fan, I can see Florida Gator fans. I know people follow recruiting religiously and they get super excited about seeing this kid come in and they're excited for Billy Napier and his program, who obviously needs a little help. And all of a sudden you find out it's all about the bottom line, the dollar, and the kid haven't taken a snap yet. It just doesn't seem right. Info at Tony Curry Radio. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and coming back to what President Baylor was talking about, is that, we are making rules based – there's 200,000 student-athletes in college, 200,000.
Yeah.
And we're making rules based on what can the Heisman Trophy get,
mm-hmm.
What the Heisman Trophy winner or the finalist for the Heisman Trophy or, your players of the year, which there's only so many of those. So when you think about how few players we're talking about, but we're making rules, that's not how laws are made. right? We do what's best for the greatest good. It's no matter what the law is that gets passed, there's some number of people it's good for and some that it's not good for, but the decision is made for the greatest good.
Yeah.
But not that's not what we're doing here. We're making a decision and we're changing our rules and we're bending all that for 1% of 1%.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We get emails every single week. We try to get to as many as we possibly can. He's Mark Ingram, the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. This is called the UAB Director's Chair, available on any podcast platform. So check it out. Of course, you can also hear it on TKR. And thanks to the tens of thousands of folks who've already downloaded the TKR app. It's classic rock to the bone and great programming, unique programming you can only hear here on Tony Curry Radio. Paul asked at Tony Curry Radio and at UAB_AD, what are we doing to get an HH or at least a 2-for-1 with Power 5 programs for football and scheduling? How can we improve our OOC schedule in basketball? How much input do we have in the basketball schedule? And he went on, he DM'd me, he said, just to clarify, is there a possibility where when you have a non-conference schedule that's not particularly sexy, can you parlay maybe a football home visit with their basketball program that perhaps isn't as good as their football program? And can you work that way? And how does that work? And how far out does that work?
Yeah, so good questions. Paul's a good fan of ours and comes to a lot of our games. Appreciate the question. So football and basketball are different. The basketball schedule, I'll start there. Basketball schedule is pretty much year to year. And the only things that are not year to year is, for example, when we sign a home and home agreement like we did with South Carolina and West Virginia, you at least know 2 years out, right? We're here and then we go there kind of thing. But that's about as far out as basketball scheduling goes. And it's because there's so many games and the rosters change so dramatically. And so the coaches do the scheduling because they know the dates better. And they're just, it's this giant puzzle that moves very quickly. And the coaches who know each other and they have relationships, they're able to put those schedules together. And that's why it's really valuable to us to have a guy like Andy Kennedy, who's been in the business for a long time, has a lot of positive relationships with other coaches and can get agreements like the one we had with West Virginia and South Carolina over the last 2 years. Football is done like 10 years out. Why is that? I don't really know other than to just say that it is. And if you don't get pretty far out, you won't have a schedule. And so, when we reinstated football here in 2015, we had no schedule.
Yeah.
Because when we eliminated the program, everybody who was scheduled to play us had to go find other games. And so they scrambled to get other games. So our schedule went completely away and we had to start from scratch. Well, if you recall, we also didn't have any players. Not that we had zero, but I think we had 10 or 12 or something. And so we had to rebuild the roster. Well, not having any idea what we would look like having to start like that, Coach Clark and I agreed we needed to put a schedule together that, to the best of our ability, would be favorable for us and not try to go play the Green Bay Packers in year one, you know.
Yeah.
And so we tried to find some FBS opponents that we thought were comparable to us or that were at least, I don't want to say beatable, but people that we thought we could be competitive with. And we were, and in fact, well, had really good success there. And of course, when you schedule somebody 10 years away, if you say, well, they're the worst team in the FBS, let's go schedule them. Well, 10 years from now, they might be conference champions. So you don't really know what you're going to get until you get them. I think the first question was something about home and home with Power Fives. So we could have gotten those already. And just from that philosophy, chose not to do that for the sake of being able to, you know, let's try to be bowl eligible. You know, today, fortunately, what we've done is we've accomplished our goal. Our initial goal was let's get bowl eligible. And then let's do that, you know, 2 years in a row and then 3 years in a row, to where being bowl eligible wasn't a surprise anymore. It wasn't this shocking celebration. It was expected. And we've gotten to that place. And it was, let's turn that then into, and then let's win the conference championship, right? Let's be competitive for the conference championship. And so we've done that. And a big part of that, though, was scheduling people that we could be competitive with in the non-conference. So as we enter the American, we look at other schedules and we see that the American schools are doing home and homes with Power Fives. And so we will start to look at doing that. The hard part, Paul, and for others listening, is that you may not see that though for 8 years. So we are pursuing that and looking at that and who would be interested in coming here to Birmingham that we could play, you know, home and home with. And there are some that are interested. It's just that because we schedule so far out, you won't be able to see that for several years.
Hey, when you join the AAC next year, let's make a road trip up to Memphis. I'll meet you up there for a game or something like that, and I'll take you to Tin Roof, or we can hang out.
They'll be here first now, Tony.
That's true.
Coming here next year.
There you go. All right.
Get your ribs out.
My ribs are always out, my friend. They're always good for poking. I got news for you. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for your time, man. Greatly appreciate you. We'll catch up next week.
Sounds great, Tony. Thank you, pal.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.